Saturday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed its version of an energy bill that has a potentially groundbreaking requirement that the nation's utilities get 15% of their power from renewable sources such as the wind and sun by the year 2020. Although renewable energy was not in the Senate's version of the bill, 50 senators sent a letter to Energy Committee leaders in April expressing support for it. But before environmentalists begin celebrating, it's important to note that most Congress members favor large-scale facilities with the idea that bigger is better. A new study by the Institute for Local Self-Reliance says bigger is not better. While there are indeed small cost reductions from very large-scale absentee-owned renewable energy facilities, these are overshadowed by the significant loss in potential economic benefits from locally owned and more modestly scaled facilities. Joining me on the line this morning is the author of this new study, John Farrell. He's a research associate at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. The report is called Wind and Ethanol, Economies and Diseconomies of Scale. Welcome to Uprising, John.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for joining us. So on the one hand, certainly it is good news that Congress is thinking in the right direction in terms of getting more of the country's energy needs from renewable sources. And I'm sure that yourself and other environmentalists are happy about that. But why is bigger not better?
Well, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think when it comes to renewable energy goals, we've been really focused on quantity, and I think we need to be a little more sophisticated. There are basically two reasons why, you know, you have to question the bigger is better argument. The first one is, as you mentioned, the advantages of building big are small. If you have a 100 million gallon ethanol plant, you know, there are some cost savings associated with building a really large facility. And a lot of those can be erased, though, by needing to ship your product much further away because you have so much that the local market is overwhelmed. The more significant effect, though, is that if you have a really large ethanol plants or really large wind farms, that you make it very hard for local ownership to occur. Farmers can't put together money to build a 100 million gallon ethanol plant. But if you had, for example, three smaller farmer-owned plants making 100 million gallons total in three different plants, they'd be able to produce the ethanol for nearly the same cost, but about $9 million per year in dividends would go back to those farmer owners right into the communities. And, you know, at that point, you've got rural development policy combining with energy policy, and that's the real economy of scale.
Hmm. Now, very briefly, as an aside, on the issue of ethanol, we're talking basically about a biofuel here, right?
Yes.
What is your position on the issue of biofuels? They have certainly come under criticism by some environmentalists as really not being the best way forward, but they've been quite, this industry and this method has been quite supported by President Bush.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. I think, I mean, the thing that we, the perspective that we have is that, you know, we talk about ethanol because it's here. You know, there's 5 billion gallons that were produced in the United States last year. There are enough plants under construction to double that to 10 billion gallons or 11 billion gallons. But the advantages of local ownership and this focus on scale, they really transcend any particular renewable energy source. We talk about ethanol because it's here, but not because it's necessarily the best way to go about it.
Hmm. So what about wind as compared to ethanol in terms of a good renewable energy source just in general?
I mean, we really like wind. There's not very much not to like about it. It's a no-carbon source once you've constructed it. It can be scaled to a lot of farmer ownership. In Minnesota, for example, we have a community-based energy development law that or statute that helps farmers and other rural residents pool together their resources to build wind turbines. And it's been successful at getting over 150 megawatts of community-owned wind energy in Minnesota. So it's a great resource, and it has a lot of advantages.
So, John, why wouldn't a bigger wind turbine be better than, you know, a smaller one or a more modestly sized one?
Well, what it really comes down to is not maybe so much in the individual turbine, because even the farmer-owned turbines that are being built in Minnesota and around the country are pretty large. They're 1.5 megawatt turbines or 2 megawatt turbines. They're what we call utility-scale turbines. The real issue is when it comes to the size of the wind farm, the collection of wind turbines, and how big those are. You know, when you go off from, say, a 25 megawatt to a 200 megawatt wind farm, you're basically about 10 times as big, and you do reduce the cost of producing that electricity by maybe 25%. But then you often have to build these sort of in very remote areas where you're going to find that wind resource, which means you have to then use big high-voltage transmission lines to send that power back to the place where people actually use it in the cities. And a lot of that power is lost along the way, and a lot of those efficiencies are lost along the way. And one thing that we like to focus on is, you know, if you have smaller wind farms, maybe you have somewhat of a trade-off in, you know, you don't have quite the same efficiency of scale in producing that power, but if you're a lot closer to the actual place where that power is being used, or you can place those wind farms in many different areas across the state or region, you can take advantage of the fact that you're going to be much closer to where that electricity is being used, and you can get an economy of scale there that you can't when you build one really large wind farm, say, 500 miles away from a town.
So there's two things going on here, not just having something that's closer to the place where the electricity and the energy, rather, will be used, but also spreading it around so that, you know, so that it's available in a more uniform way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there have been some concerns with wind power of what's called intermittency, which is this idea that, you know, sometimes the wind doesn't blow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you spread wind turbines around and spread wind farms around a state or a region, the wind is almost always blowing somewhere at a particular time. And the studies that have been done by utility companies have started to show that when you do spread this resource around, wind is a much more reliable resource than it was originally believed to be. And so you get that advantage, you know, when you can build those smaller scale wind farms, you can not only have local ownership of those wind farms, but you take advantage of some of that intermittency dampening effect of spreading those things around.
So let's talk about the issue of ownership. Why is Congress pushing for these renewable energy sources in a particular direction that would benefit bigger, you know, some corporate and very large scale ownership of these sorts of renewable energy sources?
Well, they have so far, and it's kind of a shame. The main thing with wind power, for example, is that they have what's called a production tax credit, which can be taken by any producer of wind power. But this tax credit can only be taken against what the IRS calls passive income, which is, you know, maybe income from a rental property or from something that is not materially involved in. And the problem is that most people, like farmers or maybe rural residents, don't have a lot of passive income, so they can't take advantage of these tax credits when they want to maybe invest in doing renewable energy. On the other hand, somebody who's a very large company, maybe like John Deere or FPL Energy, which are two folks involved in a lot of wind production, these guys do have a lot of tax liability, and they can take advantage of that. And in Minnesota, actually, our representative, Tim Walls, has just introduced a provision that would change the production tax credit to allow people to take it against ordinary income. So just me, you know, my earned income from my job, the income taxes I pay could then be, I could then get a credit against those from the production tax credit. And so it would really broaden the ability of a lot of people to invest in renewable energy, and particularly wind energy, in a way that Congress really hasn't looked at before. The focus has really so far been on quantity and not the quality of the energy that we're developing.
Now, John, are there also other advantages to local ownership, just as there might be, or just as there really have been found to be for local ownership of other energy, more conventional energy utilities that are, for example, nonprofit and locally owned?
Yeah, I mean, there are sort of twofold benefits in terms of local ownership. One is that the economic impact of a locally owned wind turbine or ethanol plant is more significant than one that's absentee owned, that's owned by somebody who's not in the community. Like a locally owned wind farm, the studies have shown that they generate anywhere from 25% to 300% greater economic impact in the construction and operation of that wind turbine. And the same goes for ethanol plants. There's a benefit of an increase about between 5 and 30% greater economic impact if that plant is locally owned, because more of the production costs might be sourced locally. The loan might come from a local bank, for example. There are a lot of different advantages there. And the advantages also happen on an individual level. For example, if a farmer leases his land to be used for a wind turbine by somebody else, he might get about a $5,000 per year payment. So over a 20-year life of that turbine, he gets about $100,000. If instead he invests in being an owner in that same wind turbine, he could see as much as $1.2 million over that same 20-year period.
Hmm. Now, finally, John, are you trying to get members of Congress, particularly those who sit on the energy committees, to read this report that you've just written? Do you think they're going to respond to what you're calling for, which is more local ownership, more modestly sized sources of renewable energy?
Well, I would think they would be interested in it because you have here an opportunity, as I said before, to sort of connect rural development policy to energy policy. And instead of looking at them in two separate containers, to be able to say, look, if we focus on local ownership here with our energy policy, if we, for example, look at Representative Walz's proposal to allow the production tax credit to be taken by ordinary folks, we can develop wind energy at the same time that we're pouring resources into rural communities to the individual farmers, to the folks that we've always been saying that we want to help with, you know, agricultural policy or rural development policy.
So this could actually go into the Farm Bill?
Absolutely.
Hmm. What are the chances?
Well, unfortunately, the Farm Bill has already moved pretty far along,
right.
I think. And so I don't know that the chances are all that good. But Representative Walz already has his proposal up, and it's a standalone. It's not part of the Farm Bill, and it's still a policy that could definitely make a lot of motions toward local ownership.
And that is the issue of the tax credit.
Yes.
Well, John Farrell, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Where can listeners find out more about your report and about your organization, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance?
Well, most of our reports and other information are on our what's called our New Rules website, which is www.newrules.org.
newrules.org, and that's where they can get the report as well?
Yes, that is.
Again, John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
John Farrell is a research associate at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and we've been discussing a report that he has just authored called Wind and Ethanol, Economies and Diseconomies of Scale. You can find out more about the Institute for Local Self-Reliance as well as this report at newrules.org. That's newrules.org. For Sonali's subversive thought for the day, I'd like to quote James.